Are you someone who tries to drive while distracted by your phone? Someone who props it on the steering wheel or peeks down at it for a glance? Or just scrolls and scrolls? If so, you could be the next person to get into a fender bender, get a ticket, veer off the road, or even cause a crash that kills you or someone else. Enough already. Put the phone away or pay. Paid for by NHTSA.
This is The Rich Eisen Show.
Here we go now.
With guest host Jim Jackson, live from The Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Oh, listen, DJ Burns is my favorite player right now in college.
Come on. Yeah. I text Chris. Probably first, the first 10 minutes of the first game, I said, DJ Burns is my new favorite player.
He's the best.
Earlier on the show, Steelers defensive tackle Cam Hayward. Still to come, Purdue men's basketball head coach Matt Painter. CBS Sports NFL analyst Charles Davis. And now, sitting in for Rich, Jim Jackson.
Welcome back. Welcome back. A great segment with Cam. I appreciate that big time. And speaking about a great segment, a really good friend of mine, a former player that I played against at Purdue, now big time coach at Purdue University, who's heading to his first Final Four, my guy Matt Painter, is going to join us on the show right now and talk a little Final Four hoops. Mr. Painter, how are you, my friend?
We are doing good, man. We are doing good. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Now, since I'm older, is it okay if I call you Mr. Painter?
I don't think you're older, so.
Hold up.
Uh-oh.
Hold up. 93?
Right. I was born August 27th, 1970.
Oh, you got me by a month or two.
Yeah. I was old for my grade, so that's what. Yeah.
Okay, I got it. How's it been, man, since, finally getting over the hump a little bit more, back, getting refocused? How's it been?
You know, for us, it was, a little surreal just because of, Coach Katie was there. Robbie Hummel was doing the radio. And just you see so many people that have invested in Purdue's program through the years that deserved to coach in a Final Four, play in a Final Four, and to see their emotions and how happy they were. Like, that was amazing. You know, that was amazing. We had grown men in the stands crying just because, more than anything, Jimmy, like, as you know, we've been really good for a long time, but we haven't, as you mentioned to start the show, we haven't gotten over the hump and gotten to a Final Four. And so just a lot of people just, happy for our players, happy for the program, but more than anything, kind of happy for themselves, right? Like, you stick by your team, you stick by your school. And we've had a lot of people that have just been extremely loyal and hung in there, but it hasn't been because we were getting our brains beat in. We got the most wins in the last 10 years in the Big Ten. We got the most Big Ten championships ever. It speaks for itself, how tough the Big Ten is, and how good the Big Ten has been for such a long time. But that caveat was always there, right? But they haven't got to a Final Four since 1980. They haven't won a national championship. So that was great. And now you got to be able to kind of move past those emotions and get ready, to play a game and move to your next opponent. So, we're excited about practicing in April, and we're excited about playing in April.
But how big of a burden was that for you, Matt? Because you talked about the successes in regards to the number of wins in the Big Ten, and I'm very familiar with it by covering you guys, for such a long time, and the success you had, Big Ten champions, but yet not having, not only from a Purdue perspective, the Final Four, the national championship, but the last national championship for the Big Ten was Michigan State in 2000. How much of a burden of that do you carry with you because of that success? Or is it a burden?
There's no doubt it's always a burden. Like, anytime people say that they don't feel that, we're just going to go play, like, we don't hear this or hear that. I don't know if that's entirely true. There's always a percentage that I think great teams, great players, they use, though, that noise as fuel. They use that to get them going, to always have that kind of edge. And but there's no question it's a burden for us. We've been to the second weekend a lot. but yet we've had, you know, I think we've gotten beat up more than anything for who we've gotten beat by more than anything. You know, like, you know, you get beat by Kentucky, you know, you get beat by, you know, Kansas. Like, no one's going to beat you up for that. But now you get into the second round and you get beat by you get beat by St. Peter's. You know, you get beat in a monumental loss, the 16-1 game. And now I think that's what you carry more than anything, because that's what you hear. And almost like Jimmy, we've been undefeated last three non-conferences. And a lot of people would say, you know, who cares? But I'll never hear a good player or a good coach say, who cares? Mm-hmm. Hey, you've won back-to-back Big Ten titles by three games. You know, last team to do that was the 1976 undefeated Indiana Hoosiers. That's a long time in the league. You know, that's a heck of, you know, an accomplishment for a program to have, but you still don't win in the tournament like you should. So we've raised those expectations, and with raising those expectations, now when you have disappointments, you know, you do carry that burden. So, like, you want to say that you don't, but, like, you know, you can't orchestrate how you feel. And we're all competitive people, and when you're in charge and you're responsible, you feel it. But I think it's your job as a leader to make sure those guys that are playing for you, is this isn't always on them. But the guys that are on our team last year, it's on you. You know what I mean? But us getting beat by Little Rock 8 years ago isn't on anybody. That's on me. Us getting beat by North Texas, that's not, you know, that's not on anybody. That's on me. So, like, I think it starts with owning it as a coach. And just like anything, if you own something, you can fix something.
Well, you know, and that's interesting, Matt, because – You want to take the pressure off your players so they can focus, but yet and still in today's world with social media and all the, you know, accounts, that it always comes up. And you want to explain to your guys, okay, last year was last year, it doesn't matter, but we all know that they carry that burden. Kind of walk me through a little bit of the process this year that you had to take to kind of keep those young men focused on the task at hand and not kind of looking in their rearview mirror about what happened last year.
Yeah. Well, I want to jump always to the functionality of things, when in reality, we need to talk about, you know, how people feel and how they felt with that loss and how we're going to handle ourselves and how we're going to go about. Everybody wants a drastic change. And if we were in a bad position, then we should probably have a drastic change. But we were a number one seed. We won the league by three games. Now, when you come into this year, we just have to be better at what we do. Simple. But we also had to make some changes to get more skill on the court. Mm-hmm. We had to get a little more athleticism on the court. We had to get more quickness on the court. I think Lance Jones really helped with that. Trey Kaufman-Wren gave us another guy that can score on the block. Mason Gill was coming off the bench, was the best sixth man in our league, could really, really shoot the ball. But the guys that returned really worked on their game. And we went from an average three-point shooting team to the best three-point shooting team in the country. Now, our volume's not as high as everybody else, but, you know, we're also giving Zach Edey the right of first refusal.
That's right.
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
he's touching it. And, like, I always go recruiting and I always talk about, you know, I'll leave there and someone will say, well, what do you think? I'll say, well, that team needs to, you know, get a lecture on who their best player is. Our team doesn't need that lecture. We know who our best player is. We know where our bread's buttered, but we also know that we're going to do a lot more to get him the ball through Braden Smith's ball screen actions. And we do a lot through ball screens because we want the guy guarding Zach to have to handle that, then have to handle that post D. And that causes more problems than anything. So we've put more skill out on the court so we can run more stuff and do more things, because at the end of the day, you've got to score points. And even though it wasn't a high number other day, when you got guys out there that can shoot, now you're giving your best players more spacing. And when you got more spacing and you can rebound the basketball and you can score the basketball, get your defense set, not turn it over, you know, good things are going to happen.
You know, outside of the Purdue faithful, and you know, kind of walk Zach through the progression over the years of becoming a much better player, do you think the national scene doesn't really understand how dominant, how good Zach is?
Right.
And what he brings to the table for your team?
Right. Those are the ones, like, he gets a lot of static because he's unique. Mm-hmm. I think anytime you're different, people don't want to give you, you know, the credit. You know, he's just different. You know, he's 7'4", and he's 300, and he can move, and he's competitive, and he's unselfish. Just a lot of really good qualities, you know, about him. but he's getting better. You know, like this is his seventh year of organized basketball. You know, he's improving. He's getting better. He's learning the game. And, you know, he's cutting down the nets and he doesn't need a ladder. You know, like those pictures when he does something, you're just like, you'll be amazed by like his size. Mm-hmm. But then once you see him play and you're around him, you're like, man, like this is a weapon here. Like we got to utilize this weapon as a coach. Like you got to do some things to put guys in position. But, you know, he's just a tough cover. But I've seen people, you know, do good things against him. I've seen people take things away from him. And where he's made improvements is now, you know, he's just an unselfish player and he's a passer. You know, when you have a great player, they're not going to reach the mountaintop unless they can pass the basketball. I don't care what position you're in. At some point, they're going to take you away. And whether that's with two people or three people or whatever, but, like, that's him. I think just because he never really – you know, had that limelight when he was a younger player, it's easy for him to pass if you take things away. And then you get people in rotations. And basketball is a beautiful game to play offensively when people are in rotations.
Well, and timing is everything. 10, 15 years ago, Zach would be the number one player pick. And right. But because of all the conversation of the pace and space and three-point shooting, the mock drafts have Zach Edey, you know, low first, second round. Just your time with Zach, and I know he's a competitor because when he banked the three against Indiana, he shot the three. He was having a ball with it when I had the game. But right. Improving his game and expanding and wanting to play on the next level, do you have those conversations with him in regards to his thoughts and feelings towards what he's receiving back in regards to the next level? I know he still has time to play here at Purdue. Right. Wants to win a national championship. But as a young player, the professional game is always in the back of his right. mind.
Yeah. And I think for him, it's, you know, you don't draft yourself, right? It's wanting someone to take him and understanding what they're getting and understanding what he has to do to get there to where, you know, he can get into a rotation and he can help a team. That's the commitment. Like we've committed to him, you know, now he needs that next organization to draft him, to commit to him, to have a plan for him. Hopefully it's an immediate plan, but if it's not an immediate plan, it's not that big a deal. Just the understanding of what he has to do, you know, to get there. The thing that would excite me is that he's in his seventh year of organized basketball. Like he's still getting better. He's still improving. He's not a finished product. And that's kind of scary for the success that he's had. But we had a lot of those conversations in the spring, just over the decision, right? You know, and he had great representation that really helped him and kind of let him know, like, where do you want to improve? You know, last year he wasn't going to go to the NBA and play. You know, can he go to the NBA and play right now? You know, that's their call. Like, I'm not an NBA coach, but I do know he keeps getting better. I do know he's a better passer. I do know he's a better rim protector. I do know he's a better, you know, in ball screen defense. He's way better in ball screen defense than he used to be. But is it good enough? And when you go to an NBA game and you got to be able to see both, the speed is so much different. And that's what he's going to have to adjust to. The game's not going to wait for you. We wait for him. But I just think, you know, with his work and the way he's done it, he's going to make those strides and whatever they need him to do and whatever they need him to work on, he's going to put that kind of time into it. But there's a really good basketball player in there. You know, if he was 6'4", he would still be a good basketball player. He's intelligent. He knows what's going on. His skill is improved. He would play differently, right. But he's not. And this is the way he is. If you saw some of the things he did at the end of that Tennessee game, you know, catching a ball on a dive and being able to avoid somebody with a sidestep, blocking that shot at the end of the game, like, you know, those are big-time plays and big-time moments. And, you know, I think he's going to be a good NBA player. But once again, it's getting somebody that's going to commit to him, I think, is the most important feature of this.
Yeah, a couple more things. Then we're going to shift a little bit now. Your opponent, NC State, you're going in. Unbelievable run. I said that DJ Burns is probably one of my favorite players in college basketball just because of what he brings. He's so much fun to watch. But for you guys, not to look for it, everybody's talking about what the eventual Purdue versus UConn, and you can't discount what this North Carolina State team has had to do to get here, 9 games in a row. Just real quickly, game plan-wise against North Carolina State, what do you have to? What do you see that makes them so formidable as an opponent?
Right. I think, you know, first of all, if you make mistakes, they're going to make you pay. You know, they will set the tempo of the game. If you're making baskets or you're taking good shots and you're just missing them, you know, they're going to run good half court offense. And even though they don't run a lot of stuff, they're getting the ball to their best guys. You know, DJ Horn is a guy that can just really light it up. You know, he can break you down. He can shoot. He can make tough shots. But he can really, you know, he can miss four or five, then all of a sudden hit one, then all of a sudden, boom, he's hot. He's going to come at you. Casey Morsell's played a lot of college basketball. Their point guard that has come in, a transfer from Stanford, has been great for him. He's been steady. You know, big fella that you talked about, Derriere, that's, you know, the way he's rebounded the basketball here, the RM, I bet I pronounced his name incorrectly there. He's been fabulous. You know, he's been Dennis Rodman type like rebounder. That's really, really given them a spark. And then you get to big fella down there, and he's proven that whatever look you give him might cause a little bit of problems, but it doesn't cause problems for long. He's a very intelligent player. And anytime you see guys that can score and pass, you know, that high basketball IQ normally comes into play. He gets a feel for what you're going to do, and he reads that, and he exposes people. If you want to stay one-on-one, he generates fouls. He scores the ball. If you want to run at him, or you want to double him from both sides and do different things, he gets that ball out of his hand, and he's got those laser passes. So he reminds me a lot of Travion Williams, a guy that we had that could really pass the ball, that could bounce off of you and make plays. He's a little bigger than Travion was, but Travion still was, you know, 6'9", 255, 260, 265, depending on the year. And, like, he could make those same kind of plays. So Zach's win against him. Our other guys have win against him a little bit that way. But, you know, Travion was explosive just like him when he gets it going. Like, those when those guys start to get that good feel about them, that's when they're dangerous.
One more, and this is more so pointed directly at you, Matt, because you've been through so much. You've been a player at a high level there at Purdue. Had some outstanding teams at Purdue that hasn't made it this far, but now you're here. For you, and I ask this, we always talk about players containing their nerves or their anxieties or right. their anxiousness before a game. Do coaches have the same thing?
Oh, without question. Without question. You especially have it on those late games because you have to wait all day. I love the noon games. Let's wake up. Let's have our pregame. You know, let's get on that bus. Let's play the game, man. Let's get this over with. Let's get it on. Have a lot of time this week. You have a lot of time. And so, like, now you're just, you know, constantly thinking. You know, you just want to have your team prepared. And at times you can overthink that. So I think, you know, sticking to, you know, what's got you here. But more than anything, those nerves are there. I mean, I think that's real for players and it's real for coaches.
Well, I tell you what, look, I'm extremely happy and proud. I know Coach Katie, you know, sitting there beaming, and all the other players who had come before, because they understand the journey that you had to go through to get to this point, the ups and downs and answering all the questions. Again, still got a lot of work to do. You made it this far. So I look forward to catching up with you this week, you know, in Phoenix to kind of see what happens next. But, my man, congratulations on everything. Those young men have put in a lot of work, and I know Purdue Nation is proud of you.
All right, man. Thanks, Jimmy. Okay. Appreciate you having me on.
You got it.
All right.
Thanks a lot. I mean, bro, I mean, we talked to Jay awesome. Wright yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's why I kind of wanted to make – and I'm glad we were able to get Matt on today to kind of come on the back end of that, of what Jay had to go through, all the criticisms mm-hmm. of losing, you know, having a high seed. And people don't understand how hard it is to win. In a one-game scenario, despite maybe what your record says,
yeah, there's a lot of randomness that it goes is. On. You know, look at the NFL playoffs. Any one-and-done situation. You know, NBA, Major League Baseball, generally the best team
is going to win.
Over a seven-game series, that's right. The best team usually figures it out and wins. One game, anything can happen.
Yep.
Bad bounce, injury.
Foul trouble.
You know, look what happened to Houston. You know,
Houston too. Think about this for Calvin Sampson. 2 years in a row, you lose Marcus Sasser last year to an injury.
Yep.
And then this year with your best player was Shed.
Right before halftime.
Two years in a row when you've kind of dominated, in particular, your conference. You've put up all these great numbers. You put yourself in a position as a number one seed.
Exactly.
And then right in a situation like that, boom, your leader is gone.
It's over.
You know, and I know for Matt, like I said, and I'll take it back to Jay, that finally 2016, getting over that hump to finally win it, and then taking that deep breath and like, okay, now I can really coach.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And then coming back and winning it again. I'm not saying that that's the same scenario with Purdue, but very similar in regards to just their careers.
Mm-hmm. And I also look, you know, talk about Purdue. They were a one that got upset last year.
Yes. Yep.
It happened to Virginia, and then they won the championship mm-hmm. the next season. You know, they locked in. I kind of feel that maybe Purdue is kind of oddly destined in a way like that.
That's the reason I picked them, to be
a one seed, to lose to a 16, shocking fashion. And then now the next year, here they are, right back at it. Guys come mm-hmm. back, number one seed. Maybe they're kind of destined, but, you know, UConn looks like just such a powerhouse.
I tell you one thing. Both teams are similar.
I don't know. Both teams
are very similar to me because their actions on the ball and off the ball, as a defense, you got to be locked in. I mean, the key for both teams is, can you disrupt the timing mm-hmm. of their offense? Okay? See, because the thing they do have is they have outlets, meaning you have Donovan Klingon inside that you can drop it to, but then you have Zach Edey that you can drop it to when you're not making some shots. But I think Matt said something very key, too. Trey Kaufman-Wren and Lance Jones, they provide something different that they didn't have last year. In particular, Lance Jones on the perimeter. If Lawyer Fletcher or Braden Smith kind of were off, they didn't have another option to go to. This year, Lance provided that on the perimeter. Mm. And then couple that with the fact that the two that I mentioned in Foster, Lawyer, and also, I mean, Fletcher and Braden Smith, they came back more determined. They were bigger. They were stronger. They were more confident. They had the chip on the shoulder from last year. So you didn't really make a big change in the lineup, in your backcourt, but they made a change mentally and physically.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what makes this so intriguing going into the NCAA tournament. And plus, I've been covering for years, so I've seen it up close and personal. So thanks again for Matt Painter for jumping on. We got a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Every day when we're on the road, people around us endanger themselves and others by using their phones while driving. They think they're hiding it, but we've all seen them and know exactly who they are. For instance, there's the sneak a peeker who darts their eyes between the road and their texts. There's also the got a ticketer looking upset because they just got a ticket for using their phone while driving. And what about the fast scroller who can't drive 5 minutes without updating their social feeds? Or the nightlighter, who has that mysterious glow illuminating the inside of their car after dark? Do any of these sound familiar? If they remind you of yourself or someone you know, rethink your behavior before you find yourself becoming the fender benderer, the veering off the roader, or worst of all, the driver who killed someone. Put the phone away or pay. Paid for by NHTSA.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
I cannot believe you watched Charles Oakley get dragged out of Madison Square Garden with your own two eyes, Bobby. I mean, I could not.
Spike Lee was there. You couldn't believe it.
Did everyone just like it during the timeout?
Spike Lee was there?
Boo, boo.
It's so nice. That next thing you're going to tell me, Jack Nicholson was at the Lakers game.
McEnroe was there. I know McEnroe, he was right there. He was practically in Oakley's lap.
Yeah, was Woody Allen there?
He was not.
I don't know why that's funny.
John Lithgow? Was John there?
Steve Earle was there. I saw Steve Earle.
Okay. Oh, really?
This is the new Madison Square Garden.
Leon was there, the actor.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, he was there.
What about...
Bob Costas? Told you.
Costas. Now...
Oh, yeah. Can you
tell this story?
Not feeling me.
You got to tell the Costas story.
Tell the story.
When I was like 21 years old, I went to the... The Heisman Trophy.
At the Downtown Athletic Club?
Yeah, I managed to get invited. Like, I had an extra ticket, or somebody gave me a ticket, and I went to the thing. And I went to the bathroom, and Bob Costas was in the next urinal. And I was, like, 21, so this was 1990, 91. And I said, and I was peeing, and I went, I just wanted to say, I'm a big fan of yours. And he told me, and he went, don't you know the rule? You're not supposed to talk when you're in the urinal. And I was like, oh, God, I didn't. That's how I learned the rule. Anyway, so I'm at the Knicks game. I went at the Knicks game, and I never met him before since then. And I said to him, hey, this is Bobby Cannavale. I just wanted to introduce myself and say, when I was 21, I told him the story. And he went, doesn't sound like something I'd say. Shot me down. Just complete shoot down.
Twice. Well, he was also sitting on the toilet when you told him the second time. He was. Like, hey,
so what did you?
And shut the door, dude. I don't care that you have two Emmys. Chip. Shut the door, Chip.
Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger. With supplies and solutions for every industry, Grainger has the right product for you. Call. Click Grainger.com or stop by. Good stuff with Matt, man. We had good stuff this morning.
Who are you
man.
Picking, Jim? Who are your final four? Who's your champion?
I would love to see Purdue and UConn. Just for the simple fact that, of course, I covered Purdue, and Matt is a good friend. I love the NC State story.
Of course.
But from a pure matchup perspective, with two bigs playing against each other, which you don't really see. I mean, kind of bigs, guard play, coaching, very similar in how they attack and approach. I think it would be an epic kind of old school throwback a little bit with Purdue and UConn. You know, but I mean, anything can happen in the Final Four, bro.
Yes, indeed.
Especially, I mean, and it's eerily similar to North Carolina State run. I think they were 17-10 that year in 83 when they made their run through the tournament and end up beating Houston that year.
Yep.
You know, and you can't count Alabama out just because of the pace in which they play. The question is, are they going to be able to speed up UConn? Because UConn can play at so many different levels. And they control you by scoring, but also by dropping the ball inside, getting in the paint, that kind of slows you down on what you want to do on the offensive end. But ideally, just to see those two bigs and those two programs play.
I can't stop thinking about their 30-0 run in the...
You can see that in the NBA, right?
In the Elite Eight game. I mean, runs happen in the NBA. But a team gets down 10, 12.
Not in college.
They're like, they'll fine. They'll be back in it.
Not a 30-0 run in college.
It's 23-23, 5-0 run to end the half, 25-0 run to start the second half. And all of a sudden it's 53-23, and you're like, well, this game's over.
Hey, you know, the difference, too, with, like, this UConn team, like, last year, and then my boy Clark Keller uses the word, he's used it all the time, spurtability. That last year team, boom, they hit you, and it's just like, next thing you know, you're down. This team, I found this year, grinds you down, and next thing you know, it's like possession, miss something. Come back, they take advantage of it. Yep. You miss something. You know what? And the next thing you know, it's a 10-point gap, 15-point. It's a different kind of way they beat you.
Yeah, you kind of look up and you're like, wow, we're down 15.
Exactly.
How did that happen?
Yeah. You know, so, but I've never seen that in a college game where a coach didn't use the timeout to stop the run. Even if it was multiple times where they couldn't stop it the first time, they kind of wanted to take the crowd out of it when they felt it was coming on. But, man, it was spectacular by that UConn team. How about this? So, North Carolina State, Final Four, men's and women.
Yep.
And then UConn.
UConn, men's and women. What would you what are the chances of one champion? Like, if I give you
– like, one.
If I give you half championships for the over-under.
UConn.
Between the four, you'd take the over because you think the UConn men are going to win?
If I,
it's happened, we said 11 times or something? Where this
is it 11 times at the same time?
Not at the same time.
Okay.
Just, you know, not totally. Two teams.
So you're asking me a singular or both teams?
It's happened 11 times where the men and women have each made the Final Four, but never twice in the same year. I'm saying of the four schools, half a championship over under, you'd say over? You think one title among the four? Either UConn men or women win.
Yeah.
NC State.
I mean, the odds, I think, for those two favor a little bit more. Now, what's the odds that they both win it?
I saw one for NC State men and women to both win. I saw 400-1 yesterday.
400-1?
Yeah.
I tell you what, man, the job that Gino Auriemma did this year with this squad, with five major players being injured. I mean, he put on a coaching clinic, and that's not taking anything away from his opponent, but just his mind on how he was able to negotiate and navigate through not having a deep roster and lineup to keep people out of foul trouble, to keep their opponent off balance, to be able to handle, I think, a young Juju Watkins, what she's going to learn. And this USA team was USC was number one seed. They had players. But it was the experience, I think, of the bench for UConn and having a calming presence like a Paige Bueckers at the helm.
Yeah.
That was spectacular. And if you didn't appreciate that kind of mental basketball in that game, men and women, it don't matter. That was on full display in that game right there.
Yes, I wonder if Paige will be back next year.
She already said.
She's coming back. Angel Reese announced that she's leaving.
She declared
that she's going to the WNBA. We know Caitlin Clark's leaving. Juju Watkins has to be back. She's a freshman.
Freshman. But I can see Paige because
she is coming back?
100%.
Oh, good for her.
You know, the injuries
probably
took away, and I can't speak for her, but.
Mike, I'm not going to lie. I got to look this up. I don't know if I trust you.
No, I think she did say she's coming back.
Okay. Sorry, Mike. I don't like that.
But if she does, if that's the case, but I can understand it because you got to think about where she was at coming out of high school. This was like the phenom, the one that was going to take over and continue the legacy. Not that she hasn't, but injuries have taken away probably a little bit of that limelight.
You're right.
And probably some of those accomplishments. Yeah. And staying another year with a full plethora, full lineup, despite no matter what happens this year, even if they win it, adds to her legacy in college, probably something that she thought about when she first came
in. Plus, if Angel's gone and Caitlin's gone and she takes UConn and wins,
changes. UConn and Juju now.
Juju.
When the women's game is just, on the trajectory. I don't know if you guys saw this. There was a tweet going around. Someone who covered women's sports. Said when Paige was in the sixth grade.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Hey, watch out for this girl, Paige Bueckers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
She's going to be the truth.
When my son was younger, honestly, when my son was younger, when he's playing basketball, I would say, watch women play. He would say, why? I said, fundamentally, they're more sound because they don't just rely on athleticism, even though women have become they're much better athletes, just like men are in today's world. Mm-hmm. You can see it on the court. They're much different kind of players, okay? But the fundamental stuff that I think men a lot of times take for granted, a little left-hand pass in the post, okay? A wide-open jump shot that sometimes college men players have trouble making, women make the pull-up jump shot,
the up and under,
head fakes. Just those little fundamental things that makes women's game so beautiful to watch at times. My son, when he was younger, I said, take a look. You'll figure out how to play the game the right way on a consistent basis, man. So this weekend should be great. I mean, I'm in Phoenix, so we usually Friday, Sunday, have a cigar.
Or two.
And go watch
sure.
The games. It's going to be a great weekend of basketball.
Are you kidding me?
You know, the women's is in Cleveland, right?
Yes.
Do you think there'll be a time where they're at the same venue they and they just make a big, long, four-day weekend out of
it? How would that look? How would that work to be able to put both in that? Would you take one away from the other by doing that?
See, I've been you know what I'm saying?
I think it would be a big celebration. Cool. I mean, you could still do it. Women on Friday and Sunday and the men on Saturday and Monday, and you could really make a blowout four-day kind of college hoops extravaganza.
I mean, but where would you – I mean, there's only so many locations you can have that can accommodate from a hotel perspective.
That's true. Airport. Hotels and airports and restaurants.
You know, you're thinking logistically.
Yeah.
If you're talking about a 70,000 seat stadium.
Sure.
And you're talking – now, women may be at that point. You never know.
Yeah.
You know, to bring that many fans, because if you got 12 million viewers
– Yeah, oh, yeah.
Now, again, the Caitlin effect has a lot to do with that. Who takes that banner and really draws like Caitlin is going to be, and not that Juju is not going to be awesome and Paige coming back is not going to be awesome and some other women, but it's always an anomaly where it's a storyline where this one person has it draws it. And no matter how good somebody else is, they can't draw as well as that person.
Right.
You know, but that's an interesting theory. If they
I thought that same thing on Monday. Like, what if they just did this all together? And to quote Trent from Swingers, there is one place, Vegas.
Vegas. No. Vegas, you know what? Vegas.
I
would
say
Vegas. Another great place that I think could accommodate the breadth of.
Oh, New Orleans.
New Orleans.
New Orleans could definitely do it.
New Orleans because of the hotels.
And Indianapolis probably could.
But you know, Indy, right in the city, you got a bunch of hotels downtown, but I don't know if it.
Yeah.
Maybe San Antonio.
Ooh, I like that.
We were talking about 100,000 people probably coming in.
Yes, about 100,000.
Potentially.
Vegas makes, Vegas makes the most.
The hotels are there.
Every championship should just be in Vegas.
I mean,
that's
why we said that after the Super Bowl. Yeah, just have them all.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
There's no other team.
By the way, did you guys see what Gino said? Well, they asked Gino
about Caitlin
Juju any advice. And he's like, I told her GoPro.
So he don't have to deal with her?
He don't have to deal with her. Like, he was like, you know, but since there's a going overseas, WNBA, making money, obviously she can't. She could go overseas, I guess, but she can't go to the
How unfair is that, though, for women now in the game?
She's going to make so much money in this.
But how unfair is that for women in the game now? They have to wait three.
Yeah, I mean.
You know, in today's world, it's some of these young women that can play in the W. To have an opportunity
there's no doubt
early.
They can play, but I think in today's NIL world, they're making so much more money.
Yeah, but they
like
can
the
take
top top.
But they can take that money. They can take those deals
with
them. So it's the fallacy is that by Caitlin or somebody else going
giving
to
up that
they
money.
Go, no,
they're
you,
not, they're not
you take
do that
exactly. You take that money with you.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So that's that argument there.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. Why not be able to change the rules that a young woman, if she's talented enough, can now declare earlier for the draft.
Hey, who knows? Maybe the rules will change.
Yeah, they should change. You know? I mean, because we've seen these. You don't think Juju right now can play? Now, mentally, she has to mature and understand how to play.
And that's where
but
I was
from a physical
you.
Perspective. Physical,
but, you know, these are still, you know, if this was the NBA, I'd say grown-ass men. These are grown-ass women in the WNBA. And so, yeah, I mean.
But we've seen it in the NBA. I mean, guys that at 19 years old, you think that Zion was the most mature at 18, 19?
Definitely not.
You know what I'm saying? But he's grown.
Would you say, though, the popularity of the women's game is where it's at because we are familiar with these women who have been around 2-3 more years?
What? Great
whereas
point.
The men's game.
We don't know.
I got to say, didn't watch a lot of college basketball this year outside of some Syracuse, but. I don't know who anybody is because of the one and dones.
Great point. And I made this a while ago in regards to the popularity of individual players. And I'm going to give you two examples. One, because, you know, back in the day when you were in school 3 or 4 years, you really got to know a personality besides the game of a person. So when they got drafted, you followed them for 2, 3, 4 years. So you knew who they were, right?
Yeah.
You don't have that anymore.
Yeah, look at your era of college basketball, the early mid-90s. Nobody these guys, everybody him. Stayed 3 and 4 years. Yeah. You think Grant Hill would have been a one and done if he played now? Of course he would have.
Of course he would have.
You probably would have. Sharif, like all these guys, AI. And it's, you know, it's not like that anymore.
No, you know, and I think what has it hurt the game, I think, in some aspect from a star power perspective, and this is not taking a shot, but what happens is your top tier players end up leaving early. Then your secondary players end up becoming the quote-unquote superstars who are probably not as talented as those one-and-done guys.
Right.
Okay, so you don't have the same kind of draw or excitement. Like a Carmelo that's there as a freshman is much bigger draw if he's there as a junior than some other player because of Carmelo. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But I give you this, what happens in college. Zion Williamson is a prime example. When he came out of high school, in that class, R.J. Barrett was considered the number one NBA draft prospect. But what college did for Zion that 1 year was catapult him above any and everybody else by playing on national TV all the time. If he goes overseas or plays in the G League, he doesn't get that same kind of coverage. Mm-hmm. So there is a balance there with guys and women who play college basketball for a year on the men's side, be able to get that publicity, have a special talent, and carry that following with them.
And he blew out his shoe in front of Obama.
Oh yeah.
But he had a lot going on that freshman year. So you know what I mean? Yeah. But just think about his rise in popularity. You saw him on YouTube.
Well, he was the first player. He was the first YouTube guy. Yeah,
but you know what I mean? Yeah. Well, yeah, he was. And then next thing you know, by being at Duke, on national TV all the time, he's the number one pick. You know what I mean?
Whereas John Morant, nobody really knew about him until the tournament.
Until the tournament.
Yeah.
You know, but it was a 4-year cycle for Ja. He had to mature into where he ultimately was going to be.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, a whole nother thing. But I do think that women should be able to cash out, you know, and go early.
Absolutely.
Because, like you said, well, that's also going to deplete their game a little bit. But I think now people want to continue to build the women's game, so that could have something to do with it. But that shouldn't be a reason to.
I don't say
you can't do something.
No, you can't. No, I think before the rule is antiquated from that perspective. But in today's world, these young women come in again. The mental part with any young player going to the professional level is going to be an adjustment. I don't care how good you are. LeBron James had to deal with it from a mental perspective, even though he was physically gifted. Kobe Bryant, Kevin Garnett, Tracy McGrady.
You don't know what you don't know.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
It can tell you, you know, but especially when Kobe came, you can think about it. He was 18, 19 years old. Pretty much everybody on the team was a vet. Mm-hmm. I mean, vet in regards to the teams were older at the time. So your connection with some of your teammates weren't there. Because they were older cats that you were, you know, dealing with on an individual basis. And I think that's why Kobe was able to focus so much more on just basketball, because he was so young at the time, he didn't probably have a lot of commonality with the other players on the roster. So
let's do it. I want to ask you, let's take a break, okay. But I want to talk about Bronny James when we come back.
Who is that?
Bronny James.
Who is that?
Bronny James. Come on.
Oh, no. Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Kevin Hart, why didn't security let you onto the Philadelphia Eagles podium after they won the Super Bowl?
Listen, Rich. First of all, they're haters, Rich. That's the thing. They're haters, and they couldn't see me. If they would have saw me, then they would have known who I was, and I would have been right up there with the Philadelphia Eagles, bringing in the good times and year, because, you know, it's celebration time. And I say, the next time, I need you all to know who I am, because I'm the biggest star on the freaking planet. Like, it's me and The Rock. That's it. It's me and The Rock, Rich. That's it. It's nobody else.
Incredible.
I'm about to sell out the solar system. Bam. That's what I'm going to do. And The Rock says, I'm just playing, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Did you do a rock?
The Rock says, Jabron, you see, Rich Eisen, The Rock, the Brahma Bull, sitting here, you're talking about Kevin Hart. Why did he get escorted away from the Philadelphia Eagles? That's because he was drunk, Rich. He was drunk, Rich. The Rock doesn't drink. The Rock, you know what The Rock does? The Rock has a juice. The Rock has a cleanse, because every day at 2 p.m., I said 2 p.m., The Rock drops a deuce. That's what he does.
I got another good one for you. I'd like to ask Jason Statham, what do you think about the NFL's new targeting rules to make the game safer?
Let's see here. In the game of football, you have to be really, really rough. And if you're rough, that's when you get a good show. Now, if you're not rough, then it's going to be a little punsy. So I think they shouldn't do it, because I don't like punsies. I hate pansies. You know pansies, people I beat up in my films. I beat them up all the time. And you know what I do after I'm finished with them? I sit on top of their bodies, and I have sex with me girl.
Again, that took a turn. That took a turn.
Welcome back. We had a nice little tease before the break, Chris.
Yeah, let's do it.
You're talking about Bronny.
Saw this news yesterday. News, I don't know if he's confirmed it yet, but news that Bronny James is going to enter the transfer portal and leave USC.
Kind of seen that coming.
Initial thoughts? Where would you like to see him end up? What does this mean for his
at Ohio
future?
State, what do you mean?
You didn't get senior, now you get junior.
Hey, you know what I mean? I mean, it was sure. A big talk before when he was coming out of high school in regards to him, you know, maybe joining the Buckeyes. But I want to see him go somewhere where he can play and mature, and it's not as much pressure. You know what's interesting? When I did the USC-Arizona State game, I kind of mentioned this on air, all of this noise around Bronny, what he should do, what he shouldn't do, what he shouldn't do. We have yet to hear about from him what he wants, which I think is very important. It's very important that we understand what Bronny wants. Now, maybe that's we haven't heard it because his team is keeping him quiet and away from a lot of interviews, which is okay. But when he doesn't talk, when he doesn't express what he wants, it leaves it open to interpretation of everybody else to put what they think should be done. You know, so what do you think about where he should?
I said this a couple months ago. It makes perfect sense. He just needs to go, look, coming back from what he had to endure health-wise, tall task to ask of anyone, let alone, you know, someone with his name and the expectations that come along with just being – you know, LeBron James Jr. So I would like to see him go somewhere and just play and play free without expectations of mock drafts and what his future.
But would he
NBA
ever get away from that, though, for being LeBron? Listen, I had the chance to cover Michael Jordan's son when he was at Illinois. Mm-hmm. Different kind of category. But even his younger son that played in the McDonald's game, it was always something there.
Yeah.
It was always.
He'll never be able to escape it because of who he is and who his dad is. But to just go and rack up some stats, go and drop 20-8-4 somewhere and just kind of play basketball for a couple of seasons without everyone thinking he's a failure because he's not a lottery pick after his freshman year of college. It's kind of too bad.
You know, it is.
Because, and it's all of our fault, really, too, for kind of throwing this on him. But
it happens if it's a entertainer if it's a sports athlete, if it's a business person who has a child that is now assuming or growing or maybe going to take over the business, we always put this kind of pressure on the next in line to kind of carry the torch, which is really unfair. Mm-hmm. But that's what we've been doing. Now, again, to the extent my son grew up playing basketball in Columbus, Ohio. So, of course, I went to Ohio State. He played in the Big Ten, played at Ohio State. Not the same thing as LeBron and Michael Jordan, but what I told him, I said, it's a gift and a curse, bro. You go get the good stuff with it by being my son.
Yeah.
You know, doors are going to be open to you. But then it's the other side with the high expectations you go have to deal with, too. Mm-hmm. So you can't have one without the other.
Right.
You can't separate and say, okay, I just want all the good stuff, and I don't want to have any of this over here. That's not life. I told my son, I said, the sooner you're able to comprehend that, understand it, deal with it, the better off you'll be and better off you'll be able to handle the rocky roads that come with it and how you navigate it. And it's not easy. I told him, listen, I didn't have a father who played in college or in the NBA, so I don't know what that's like. I can only imagine. But, you know, you got it pretty good over here.
Yeah.
But, you know, what you deal with over here, it's going to be interesting to see,
yeah,
man.
I think you're right, too. I guess we've never really heard Bronny give an interview or, you know, state what his goals are and hopes are for his own personal career and the, you know, the kind of near future. It'd be interesting to hear what he had to say because it's just all through LeBron, really, is what we get information about him.
Yeah. You know what's interesting, too, is that we were talking about this off air, too, about the dynamic of people who say, well, he's not good enough to play in the NBA right now. And I said, Derek White.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people didn't know who he was until he kind of got San Antonio and was able to play some meaningful games and grow. You don't know what kind of player or young man turns into what kind of player after maturity, after he's been able to play. So 3 years from now, it's not like Bronny doesn't have a skill set. It's not like Bronny can't play. If he's able to mature that over a three-year period, and we look at it through the prism of him being a really good college basketball player and stop, and this over here with LeBron, maybe that narrative looks a little bit different, you know, 3 years from now.
Yeah, I know we're running out of time. I wonder if LeBron put a little too much pressure by saying, I want to play with my son in the NBA. I wonder if that's where it started.
When he said he could play for the Lakers now?
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of say, even if it's jokingly.
That doesn't help.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Doesn't help,
right?
Yeah.
No.
So.
It's interesting. I want to, you know, I'm very curious to see what plays out. I wonder if I saw somebody mention on Twitter, and that made me think of it. Does he go to Duquesne now that LeBron's old high school teammate, Drew Joyce III, is now the head coach?
Some great timing, right?
Interesting timing.
It's not like they didn't know Joyce was getting it. You know what I mean? With Dahlenbrock, the old head coach that was there, that was with LeBron.
Right.
So you know conversations were being had. Sure, I would assume that Drew was going to get it.
Yeah, he was on the coaching staff already.
He was already there.
There was a succession plan in place, it seemed like.
But I think that would be, and I would love to see him go to Ohio State, but a safe environment because you know the lineage of the coach and that he will look out for his best interests in regards to not just from a basketball perspective.
And it seems like expectations are fairly, you know, small. You know, Duquesne just made the tournament right for the first time in a long time.
In a long time. And he could help grow that. The story would be so fantastic if he went there and that program kind of took off and did some really good things.
Yeah.
And he was a catalyst in that. And he wrote his own story with that at a smaller school.
Yeah.
Huh.
I don't know.
It's like you said at the beginning of this, so it's just going to be so tough just because of that name.
Yeah.
No matter what he does, no matter what story he wants to write, the Cliff's Notes version of it's already going to be written by a billion other people about this kid. So it's, you know, you don't feel bad for him necessarily, but you feel kind of like he doesn't have a chance to become his own man.
Yeah.
Love it. Love it.
Every day when we're on the road,
people around us endanger themselves and others by using their phones while driving. They think they're hiding it, but we've all seen them and know exactly who they are. For instance, there is the sneak-a-peeker who darts their eyes between the road and their texts. There's also the got-a-ticketer looking upset because they just got a ticket for using their phone while driving. And what about the fast scroller who can't drive 5 minutes without updating their social feeds? Or the nightlighter who has that mysterious glow illuminating the inside of their car after dark? Do any of these sound familiar? If they remind you of yourself or someone you know, rethink your behavior before you find yourself becoming the fender benderer, the veering off the roader, or worst of all, the driver who killed someone. Put the phone away or pay. Paid for by NHTSA.